We found that we could do nothing for the scattered sheep near us until we had first corrected the wrongs in many of the members of the church. They had let these poor souls wander. They felt no burden for them. In fact, they seemed shut up to themselves and were dying a spiritual death for want of spiritual exercise. They still loved the general cause and were ready to help sustain it. They would take good care of the servants of God. But there was a decided want of care for widows, orphans, and the feeble of the flock. Besides some interest for the cause in general, there was but little apparent interest for any, only their own families. With so narrow a religion, they were dying a spiritual death. There were some who kept the Sabbath, attended meeting, and paid systematic benevolence, yet were out of the church. And it is true that they were not fit to belong to any church. But while leading church members stood as some in that church did, giving them little or no encouragement, it was almost impossible for them to arise in the strength of God and do better. As we began to labor with the church and teach them that they must have a spirit of labor for the erring, much that I had seen relative to the cause in that place opened before me, and I wrote out pointed testimonies not only for those who had erred greatly and were out of the church, but for those members in the church who had erred greatly in not going in search of the lost sheep. And I was never more disappointed in the manner in which these testimonies were received. When those who had been greatly in fault were reproved by most pointed testimonies, read to them publicly, they received them and confessed with tears. But some of those in the church who claimed to be the fast friends of the cause and the testimonies could hardly think it possible that they had been as wrong as the testimonies declared them to be. When told that they were self-caring, shut up to themselves and families, that they had failed to care for others, had been exclusive, and had left precious souls to perish, that they were in danger of being overbearing and self-righteous, they were brought into a state of great agitation and trial. But this experience was just what they needed to teach them forbearance toward others in a similar state of trial. There are many who feel sure that they will have no trial respecting the testimonies and continue to feel so till they are tested. They think it strange that any can doubt. They are severe with those who manifest doubts and cut and slash to show their zeal for the testimonies, manifesting more self-righteousness than humility. But when the Lord reproves them for their wrongs, they find themselves as weak as water. Then they can hardly endure the trial. These things should teach them humility, self-abasement, tenderness, and undying love for the erring. It seems to me that the Lord is giving the erring, the weak and trembling, and even those who have apostatized from the truth, a special call to come fully into the fold. But there are but few in our churches who feel that this is the case, and there are still fewer who stand where they can help such. There are more who stand directly in the way of these poor souls. Very many have an exacting spirit. They require them to come to just such and such terms before they will reach to them the helping hand. Thus they hold them off at arm's length. They have not learned that they have a special duty to go and search for these lost sheep. They must not wait till these come to them. Read the touching parable of the lost sheep, Luke chapter 15, verses 1 through 7. Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners, and eateth with them. And he spake this parable unto them, saying, What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness, and go after that which is lost, until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. I say unto you, that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. The Pharisees murmured because Jesus received publicans and common sinners and ate with them. In their self-righteousness, they despised these poor sinners who gladly heard the words of Jesus. To rebuke this spirit in the scribes and Pharisees and leave an impressive lesson for all, the Lord gave the parable of the lost sheep. Notice in particular the following points. The 99 sheep are left, and diligent search is made for the one that is lost. The entire effort is made for this unfortunate sheep. So should the effort of the church be directed in behalf of those members who are straying from the fold of Christ. And have they wandered far away? Do not wait till they return before you try to help them, but go in search of them. When the lost sheep was found, it was borne home with joy, and much rejoicing followed. This illustrates the blessed, joyful work of laboring for the erring. The church that engages successfully in this work is a happy church. That man or that woman whose soul is drawn out in compassion and love for the erring, and who labors to bring them to the fold of the great shepherd, is engaged in a blessed work. And oh, what a soul-enrapturing thought that when one sinner is thus reclaimed, there is more joy in heaven than over 99 just persons. Selfish, exclusive, exacting souls who seem to fear to help those in error, as though they would become polluted by so doing, do not taste of the sweets of this missionary work. They do not feel that blessedness which fills all heaven with rejoicing upon the rescue of one who has gone astray. They are shut up to their narrow views and feelings and are becoming as dry and unfruitful as the mountains of Gilboa, upon which there was neither dew nor rain. Let a strong man be shut away from labor, and he becomes feeble. That church or those persons who shut themselves away from bearing burdens for others, who shut themselves up to themselves, will soon suffer spiritual feebleness. It is labor that keeps the strong man strong, and spiritual labor, toil and burden bearing, is what will give strength to the Church of Christ. Sabbath and First Day, April 18 and 19, we enjoyed a good season with our people at Greenville. Brethren A and B were with us. My husband baptized 8. The 25th and 26th, we were with the church in Wright. This dear people are ever ready to welcome us. Here, my husband baptized 8. May 2, we met a large congregation at the House of Worship at Monterey. My husband spoke with clearness and force upon the parable of the lost sheep. The word was greatly blessed to the people. Some who had strayed were out of the church, and there was no spirit of labor to help them. In fact, the stiff, stern, unfeeling position of some in the church was calculated to prevent their return, should they be disposed thus to do. The subject touched the hearts of all, and all manifested a desire to get right. On First Day, we spoke 3 times in Allegan to good congregations. Our appointment was out to meet with the church at Battle Creek the 9th, but we felt that our work in Monterey was but just commenced, and we therefore decided to return to Monterey and labor with that church another week. The good work moved on, exceeding our expectations. The house was filled, and we never before witnessed such a work in Monterey in so short a time. First Day, 50 came forward for prayers. Brethren felt deeply for the lost sheep and confessed their coldness and indifference and took a good stand. Brethren G.T. Lay and S. Rummery gave good testimonies and were joyfully received by their brethren. 14 were baptized, one of them a man near the middle age of life who had felt opposed to the truth. The work moved on with solemnity, confessions, and much weeping, carrying all before it. Thus closed the arduous labors of the conference year. And still we felt that the good work in Monterey was by no means finished. We have made arrangements to return and spend several weeks in Allegan County. The conference just passed has been a season of deepest interest. The labors of my husband have been very great during its numerous sessions, and he must have rest. Our labors for the past year are regarded favorably by our people, and there was manifested to us at the conference sympathy, tender care, and benevolence. With them we have enjoyed great freedom, and we part, enjoying mutual confidence and love.
Chapter 3. Doing for Christ.
From what has been shown me, Sabbath keepers are growing more selfish as they increase in riches. Their love for Christ and His people is decreasing. They do not see the wants of the needy, nor feel their sufferings and sorrows. They do not realize that in neglecting the poor and the suffering, they neglect Christ, and that in relieving the wants and sufferings of the poor as far as possible, they minister to Jesus. Christ says to His redeemed people, "Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me." Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, "Lord, when saw we thee an hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? And when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee?" And the king shall answer and say unto them, "Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." To become a toiler, to continue patiently in well-doing, which calls for self-denying labor, is a glorious work, which heaven smiles upon. Faithful work is more acceptable to God than the most zealous and thought to be holiest worship. It is working together with Christ that is true worship. Prayers, exhortation, and talk are cheap fruits, which are frequently tied on, but fruits that are manifested in good works, in caring for the needy, the fatherless, and widows, are genuine fruits and grow naturally upon a good tree. Pure religion and undefiled before the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Good deeds are the fruit that Christ requires us to bear: kind words, deeds of benevolence, of tender regard for the poor, the needy, the afflicted. When hearts sympathize with hearts burdened with discouragement and grief, when the hand dispenses to the needy, when the naked are clothed, the stranger made welcome to a seat in your parlor and a place in your heart, angels are coming very near, and an answering strain is responded to in heaven. Every act of justice, mercy, and benevolence makes melody in heaven. The Father from His throne beholds those who do these acts of mercy and numbers them with His most precious treasures. "And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels." Every merciful act to the needy, the suffering, is regarded as though done to Jesus. When you succor the poor, sympathize with the afflicted and oppressed, and befriend the orphaned, you bring yourselves into a closer relationship to Jesus. Then shall He say unto them on the left hand, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not." Then shall they also answer him, saying, "Lord, when saw thee we an hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee?" Then shall he answer them, saying, "Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me." And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Matthew chapter 25, verses 41 through 46. Jesus here identifies Himself with His suffering people. It was I who was hungry and thirsty. It was I who was a stranger. It was I who was naked. It was I who was sick. It was I who was in prison. When you were enjoying the food from your bountifully spread tables, I was famishing in the hovel or street not far from you. When you closed your doors against me, while your well-furnished rooms were unoccupied, I had not where to lay my head. Your wardrobes were filled with an abundant supply of changeable suits of apparel, upon which means had been needlessly squandered, which you might have given to the needy. I was destitute of comfortable apparel. When you were enjoying health, I was sick. Misfortune cast me into prison and bound me with fetters, bowing down my spirit, depriving me of freedom and hope, while you roamed free. What a oneness Jesus here expresses as existing between himself and his suffering disciples. He makes their case his own. He identifies himself as being in person the very sufferer. Mark, selfish Christian, every neglect of the needy poor, the orphan, the fatherless, is a neglect of Jesus in their person. I am acquainted with persons who make a high profession, whose hearts are so encased in self-love and selfishness that they cannot appreciate what I am writing. They have all their lives thought and lived only for self. To make a sacrifice to do others good, to disadvantage themselves to advantage others, is out of the question with them. They have not the least idea that God requires this of them. Self is their idol. Precious weeks, months, and years pass into eternity, but they have no record in heaven of kindly acts, of sacrificing for others' good, of feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, or taking in the stranger. This entertaining strangers at a venture is not agreeable. If they knew that all who sought to share their bounty were worthy, then they might be induced to do something in this direction. But there is virtue in venturing something. Perchance we may entertain angels. There are orphans that should be cared for, but some will not venture to undertake this, for it would bring them more work than they care to do, leaving them but little time to please themselves. But when the king shall make investigation, these do-nothing, illiberal, selfish souls will learn that heaven is for those who have been workers, those who have denied themselves for Christ's sake. No provisions have been made for those who have ever taken such special care in loving and looking out for themselves. The terrible punishment which the king threatens those on his left hand, in this case, is not because of their great crimes. They are not condemned for the things which they did do, but for that which they did not do. You did not those things which heaven assigned you to do. You pleased yourself and can take your portion with self-pleasers. To my sisters, I would say, be daughters of benevolence. The Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. You may have thought that if you could find a child without fault, you would take it and care for it. But to perplex your mind with an erring child, to unlearn it many things and teach it anew, to teach it self-control, is a work which you refuse to undertake. To teach the ignorant, to pity and to reform those who have ever been learning evil, is no slight task. But heaven has placed just such ones in your way. They are blessings in disguise. Years ago, I was shown that God's people would be tested upon this point of making homes for the homeless, that there would be many without homes in consequence of their believing the truth. Opposition and persecution would deprive believers of their homes, and it was the duty of those who had homes to open a wide door to those who had not. I have been shown more recently that God would specially test his professed people in reference to this matter. Christ, for our sakes, became poor, that we through his poverty might be made rich. He made a sacrifice that he might provide a home for pilgrims and strangers in the world, seeking for a better country, even in heavenly. Shall those who are subjects of his grace, who are expecting to be heirs of immortality, refuse, or even feel reluctant to share their homes with the homeless and needy? Shall we, who are disciples of Jesus, refuse strangers an entrance to our doors because they can claim no acquaintance with the inmates? Has the injunction of the apostle no force in this age? Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. I am daily pained with exhibitions of selfishness among our people. There is an alarming absence of love and care for those who are entitled to it. Our Heavenly Father lays blessings disguised in our pathway, but some will not touch these for fear they will detract from their enjoyment. Angels are waiting to see if we embrace opportunities within our reach of doing good, waiting to see if we will bless others, that they in their turn may bless us. The Lord Himself has made us to differ, some poor, some rich, some afflicted, that all may have an opportunity to develop character. The poor are purposely permitted to be thus of God, that we may be tested and proved, and develop what is in our hearts. I have heard many excuse themselves from inviting to their homes and hearts the saints of God. Why, I have nothing prepared. I have nothing cooked. They must go to some other place. And at that place, there may be some other excuse invented for not receiving those who need hospitality, and the feelings of the visitors are deeply grieved, and they leave with unpleasant impressions in regard to the hospitality of these professed brethren and sisters. If you have no bread, sister, imitate the case brought to view in the Bible. Go to your neighbor and say, "Friend, lend me 3 loaves, for a friend of mine in his journey has come to me, and I have nothing to set before him." We have not an example of this lack of bread ever being made an excuse to refuse entrance to an applicant. When Elijah came to the widow of Sarepta, she shared her morsel with the prophet of God, and he wrought a miracle and caused that in the act of making a home for his servant and sharing her morsel with him, she herself was sustained and her life and that of her son preserved. Thus will it prove in the case of many, if they do this cheerfully, for the glory of God.